Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King. In most protests, the chant goes, "No justice, no peace." Striking auto workers at a Stellantis plant in Toledo have come up with their own version.
No justice!
No Jeeps!
No justice!
No Jeeps!
The Jeep plant is idle, as are Ford and GM plants in Michigan and Missouri, respectively. His correspondent, Chris Van Cleve.
The union is seeking up to a 40% raise, job protections as automakers switch to less labor-intensive EVs, and an unwinding of concessions made during the Great Recession. The big three are negotiating on many of the demands, but so far their proposed raise is about half.
We have a historic offer on the table.
GM CEO Mary Barra.
Why not just give them what they're asking for?
We have to make sure the company's going to succeed for the next 115 years.
Hurricane Lee is not expected to make a direct hit on the U.S., but its effects will be felt along the New England coast and even on eastern Long Island. It's expected to make landfall as a tropical storm tomorrow in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, Canada, northeast of Maine. People in Maine are preparing. WGME-TV's Brad Rogers.
Boatyard workers in Camden, Rockport, and here in Rockland have been working at a frantic pace, pulling boats out of the water. The operations manager at Journey's End Marina says they're about as prepared for the storm as they can be.
Well, you know, we've got everything locked in the sheds. We've got all the small stuff in. I don't think we're that concerned, given we're the track of the hurricane. So I think we're in good shape.
Owners of several sailboats and smaller vessels plan to keep their boats on moorings where they will try to ride out the storm.
Search teams are digging through mud and ruined buildings, trying to find flood survivors and bodies in eastern Libya. The BBC's Anna Foster.
The mayor of Derna says that as many as 20,000 people may have been killed, swept away out to sea in that raging torrent of water. There are many survivors who now just don't simply have the basics that they need. Many of them are without homes. The electricity situation, the power situation in Derna is very difficult.
New Mexico's governor is amending her original court order, or her original order, I should say, suspending open carry gun laws for Albuquerque and the area around it after a judge shot it down. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
Wednesday, the judge imposed a temporary restraining order blocking Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's order until another hearing is held in early October. He called the governor's order unconstitutional. Today, the governor tried again, narrowing her order to focus only on public parks and playgrounds where children and their families gather.
Big losses on Wall Street, with the Dow losing 289 points today. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
100 degrees.
Ramaswamy literally said global climate change, human and affected climate change, is a hoax.
Ron DeSantis effectively pivoted on the debate stage, said, "I'm not going to answer your damn question because it will expose us as climate change denialists," which puts them in a minority, certainly with younger voters. Young people care about the future of this world, though.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah. Todd Albo would normally be sharing his dulcet tones with us, but you'll recall that last week, Todd was having issues with the cable company, with an internet connection. I'm now thinking, Todd Albo, did you break Spectrum? Are you responsible for this ESPN mess?
I seem to have broke everything else, so it wouldn't surprise me, no.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Direct from the Dairy State, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Ferriman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, "Oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore." I was like, "Oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads."
it was the same for about 5 minutes.
Like a week, everyone was excited, and then they moved on.
Well, it was like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
He opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's joking how everybody's joking now.
DeVec.
Ramaswamy.
Cease and desist. Who would be worse? Mike Pence. I mean, Ron DeSantis trying to rap also would be wildly cringy.
Ron DeSantis trying to feel feelings is weird enough. I couldn't imagine him rapping.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
LS.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, didn't cut it.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A karagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
They are, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Again, they've been a big supporter of Native Roots Radio for over 7 years, and we love supporting them, too. We're here, and it's Friday, and it's, you know, Wendy will come up later on in the show with Fun Facts Friday. And we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and always a pleasure of Native Roots Radio and our people here listening to the show to have a nice little check-in and what's going on around Minnesota and nationally. Welcome, State Senator.
Mm-hmm. Aho matakiape, everybody.
Right on. So, you know, I follow you on Facebook. I'm not a stalker. I just follow you. It pops up. But I see you have been ricing this weekend or this week. And I'd really like you to tell our audience about your experience and what that was like and how to do it. I think a lot of our allies and across Turtle Island here would love to hear about the food that grows on water.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, it was the most delightful weekend I've had in a long, long time. I had been invited by Rory Wake 'em Up. I think a lot of people in the Twin Cities know Rory. He's an artist and does just like fabulous community things and programs for the youth and the community as well. He is the guy that we have called upon to put up art exhibitions outside of our state capital here in Minnesota. So when we celebrated for the first time the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's, he organized hundreds of people. He cut out, painted himself, but then organized hundreds of people to paint these red cardboard dresses that were then lined up in front of the entire front of the Minnesota State Capitol. And if you have ever visited it, there's a huge lawn. I mean, it's probably 5 or 6 blocks, you know, in front of the Capitol. And then this past year, he brought in, boy, a dozen or more of his teepees. They're different colors. They've got different decorations and significance on them. He and his team were out there putting them up for a day or two before the exhibition, sleeping in their trucks to watch over them at night. But anyways, he and I have done some legislation together, trying to access dollars for artists that typically have not been getting the grants. So not like the big theaters and museums that you see, but the real small boots on the ground artists and programs. And so he sent me an email, said, hey, a bunch of people are getting together. You want to come up? And I said, heck yeah, I do. So when I told my kids that I was going to go up there, my daughter and her partner said, we want to go too. And so they brought their little girl up. And luckily enough, by the time we got to the campground, it was on some private owned land. There was a teepee left for me. So we got to sleep in one of Rory's teepees those two nights. So it was really fabulous. The weather the first day was a little overcast, which was fine. This is in northern Minnesota near Palisade, Minnesota. Mm. And I keep forgetting the name of the lake. It's a tributary off of, I'll think about it, whatever the lake it was. And Rory and his team had a whole bunch of canoes, paddles and all. They had the life jackets. They had the big poles to pull through the water, through the rice. They had knocking sticks. And actually, the first night that I was there, people were whittling the knocking sticks right there around the fire. So it was really super cool. Mm-hmm. And so Rory took me out. I had been racing, but it's been over a dozen years since I have, and kind of gave me the quick reminder of how to do it. And he pulled, and we just talked the whole time about programming for Native communities, issues going on in the communities. I mean, I was a captive audience for him, shall we say.
Well, truth be told, we've had in our store when we first opened, Rory brought down a child-size teepee for us, MMIW teepee, and then we had it at the fair the year before, too. So,
yeah,
he's out there in the community doing good things, and he's a very cool person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all have our, you know, he's just been so amiable, so hospitable, so generous, so authentic. I think we were out there maybe for an hour, hour and a half. And when we came in, I probably had about 3 or 4 inches, maybe more, maybe 6 inches of rice in the bottom of the canoe. So many people have told us when they were coming in, it's like, wow, this is a bumper crop. We haven't seen this kind of quality and quantity since the 70s. And so I just felt really, really fortunate to be able to get out there.
Wow. I wonder why that is, because last year there was a small amount because of the drought, and this year there was a drought too. So that's really interesting to hear.
I mean, the last couple of years have been a drought, so nobody is quite sure why. Hmm. Who knows, you know, the particular, lifespan or adaptations that wild rice takes. Hmm. Maybe they just got fed up with it and said, this is the year we're going to do it.
Right.
But it was so cool. And there were lots of people there that came to the camp and went out racing. And then we were able to process it back at the camp. But there are a lot of non-Native folks that come out and race too. In Minnesota, you need a racing license. Mm. And I bought mine. And then somebody said, well, my mom was an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Nation. And they're like, well, maybe you could have, you know, gotten one using her number. But I don't mind if those dollars are going to go back into the DNR and the system in a right way. So it's just $26 for a license. And then curiously enough, we were finishing up right around 3:00, and Rory was telling me, you know, I think we have to be off the lakes at 3 o'clock. You have nobody, you can't race after three, and we're not sure why. But my daughter and her partner went out as soon as I got back. I stayed with the baby and they went out really quick. It was just around 3 o'clock. And she probably won't like me telling you this, but probably within, you know, within 4 minutes of going out, they tipped.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So they came back in and we figured that was the God speaking to us, you know.
Well, I'm not sure which daughter it is, so I guess I can't give her a hard time when I see her. Oh, she's safe.
I'll keep that one anonymous. Yeah. But they went out the next day, on Sunday. And we're out there probably for, and I got the little girl, I got little Sylvie out in the boat. Rory took us out again just to paddle around and talk some more. And man, it was so relaxing. It was so, the weather on Sunday was even more beautiful. Mm. And you just meet all kinds of cool people right there. It's a public access. There was a group of four women that came out with two canoes, and they were, I would say three of them were a little elderly, one not so much, but it was really funny helping them and watching them get situated in their canoe. I thought we could do a really good like res dog episode on this whole situation right here. It was really cute. But then we took it back to camp and started working on processing it, and maybe I'll tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I'd like to hear about the processing and how much you brought back to the homestead. Hey, I'll be knocking on your door soon. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and here with State Senator Mary Kunis. You're going to be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Fall is here and it's the season of changes, but you know what doesn't change? The fun and excitement at the National Eagle Center in Wabasha. Pack up the family for a perfect day trip and take a drive to Wabasha to join the celebration during their Soar Fall Flight Festival happening September 23rd and 24th. They're highlighting fall migration along the Mississippi River Flyway and celebrating Native American cultures and their connections to eagles. You'll meet the live eagle ambassadors, catch an exciting program in the beautiful Riverfront Amphitheater, and enjoy a front row seat to fall migration. You can explore Native and Indigenous cultures by visiting the exhibitor booths from Effigy Mounds National Monument, Indigenous artist Inkpa Manny, and Native American craftsman Dick Mindikowski. Plus, meet live birds from the Midwest Peregrine Society. Register for an unforgettable eagle viewing trip or behind-the-scenes experience and enjoy seasonal arts and crafts for all ages. It's a fall party with the eagles, and you're invited. Get all the details online at nationaleaglecenter.org/soar and schedule your eagle fun today.
Are you ready to embark on a journey towards taking control of your health and well-being? I'm Candy Broffel, host of Green Tea Conversations. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I sit down with the local experts who are bridging the gap between mainstream medicine and complementary therapies. Each week, we explore topics in integrative medicine, nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I am your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. And that's a great tagline. I'd like to have that for our show, but it's already out there stolen. I can't steal it from Dr. Stately. So, hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Cornish, and we're kind of talking about her trip up to the deep north there, doing some ricing. And we kind of got stuck at the next step. And maybe you can fill our audience and Haley and I about what goes on next after you pound that rice into your canoe.
So, yes, then there's a lot of work left before it is edible. You know, when you're out there in the rice beds, that the rice is, you know, super duper tall, and there's tons of bugs. There's little worms. Aww. There, you know, the leaves and everything is really itchy. So when you reach out and you kind of bend the blades over into the canoe and sort of swipe through it and give them some, you know, a good whack or two. At one point, Rory's like, wow, that stuff's just jumping off into the canoe. It was wow. That plentiful. But he had us through like the really thick areas. Cool. And then we brought it to shore, and we made sure that we got every single kernel, every bit of the rice, and put them in these big bags, like you might see flour come in or something like that. Took them back to camp, and then what we did is we started to parch the rice. So when you see the pieces of rice, they still have the coating on them, and then they have a little tail, like a little red tail on them. And so you put that in they had a huge kettle. I'm sure it's one that they use for sugar bush. And a fire underneath, and you put a bunch in there, and you just keep stirring it around and around and around so it doesn't burn, but it burns off, you know, the exterior and those little tails and anything else that's in there that shouldn't be in there. And then you have to put it in another big pot and let it cool off. And from there, you have to, you know, get that hull off of it. And so once you have that, you toasted it or roasted it on the fire, then you have to get to thrashing it. And there's a couple of different ways. It was kind of funny because Rory's Aunt Betsy, who is a delightful woman, I was just getting to know her, and we were walking and talking the first night, and we were walking over to where they were parching the rice, and we're talking, then just out of the blue, she says, "How much do you weigh?" I'm like, that's kind of personal. And she's like, no. You know, anybody over a certain weight, and I won't say it, shouldn't thrash, you know, step on the rice and to break the hulls off of them. So it's usually a younger, more
agile,
lighter weight individual, and probably women. So they had some young girls there. They dug a big hole, and they lined it, and they put some of the parched rice in there, and they tap, 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 danced on it. Other times there's ways to, if you have like a big screen and you lay it on there and shake it up and maybe have a fan blow off the chaffy or whatever it is, whatever you don't want on it. And then I don't know what the next process is exactly. I mean, I don't know if you can eat it right from then. I did not bring any home because I forgot to go back to camp and get some.
Oh.
I mean, I have a little bag of the raw rice that I got out of my canoe. And then I have a bag of parched rice. Mm-hmm. But I have to do a little bit of more research. And they said they divvy it up once they've got it all done. But then the next morning, we laid out a bunch of tarps, and it was much sunnier day, warmer day, and then laid all the rice out, went through and got all the little worms out of it, all the pieces of grass or stem that we don't want in there. And then that was left out all day to dry and parch in the sun.
Oh, wow.
So that's another, yeah, because it was, we had so much. I mean, to do it like, you know, kettle by kettle by kettle would take forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I left, you know, mid-morning and went back to the put-in spot, and I didn't go back to the camp. So I didn't see what they did after that. But It's just a really, really great experience. And, you know, here in Minnesota, we've tried to put a lot of bits of legislation in place to protect the wild rice.
Right.
Sulfide is not good. High levels of sulfide is not good in for wild rice. And in northern Minnesota, because of the mining and other things going on up there, that there have been incompatible levels of sulfite. And so the U of M did a study and they gave their recommendation. And, you know, there are people that will argue both sides. But what our legislators did not know or understand is that wild rice is sacred. I mean, it is absolutely sacred to the indigenous people, almost like that Holy Eucharist wafer for the Catholic or the Christians, you know. Yeah. It's that sacred. And, you know, the story is that centuries and centuries ago, of course, Minnesota was occupied by the Dakota people, and the Anishinaabe were over on the East Coast. And one of their elders their spiritual people elders had a vision that said, you know, you need to start moving. You need to start moving west and continue moving until you find the land where the food grows on the water. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you like reestablish these, you know, this culture and these people. Right. And so they did. It took them, you know, a long, long, long time to get all the way to Minnesota. But once they got to the point and found the wild rice, they knew that they had come to their sacred place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very quickly, you know, became part of the cultures of this, of Minnesota and Canada and Michigan. And, so when we do legislation, we always are trying to educate people why these things are important. You know, there's historical context, there's cultural, there's religious. And, right. You know, wild rice is a superfood.
Yeah, it is. And,
yeah, somebody told me up there that if you had nothing to eat for the rest of your life but wild rice, mm-hmm. you could live on wild rice.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and, you know, not only the Lakota Dakotas, but Ho-Chunk that have been here 10,000 mm-hmm. years, they've been ricing too. And I was, you know, I was kind of surprised to hear that because I thought it was pretty pretty much Ojibwe. But the tribes in the Midwest here do that too, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't really know.
Yeah, remember, there were no borders. There was no Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Dakota. I mean, Canada, this was just Indian country. And, you know, while not all of our tribes in this area or the indigenous people were nomadic, they did move, you know, and use different parts of the lands at different seasons for different reasons.
Right. And so they weren't nomadic then. They had purpose of where they were going. And then the Ojibwe came from out east and were pushed out here too for colonization. So they've only been here, a couple hundred years. They've really acclimated. And like you said, what is it called again? The not the traveling story. What did you call that again?
Their creation story? Not their creation story.
I always get this mixed up too, because I've had Misko school me on this because she's Ojibwe too, and tell me about it because
the Great Migration to the Sacred Site.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a mouthful. But yeah, that's so interesting too. And if traditional native food, I just had a salad last night because we had our area picnic here for Ho-Chunk in St. Paul, and the salad had rice in it, had berries in it, it was cold salad. It was delicious. And you know, there's laws too that protect the rice, and I know as a legislator and talking to other nations across Turtle Island, it's a thing too where people mislabel things when it comes to our rice. And so there's laws out there against that too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can go on Amazon.com and buy wild rice, but where is it from and who's doing it? And, you know, our number one place to get wild rice as our family and our store is Leech Lake. And, my son-in-law is a member of a citizen of Leech Lake, too. So it's the best rice out there. And
that's so funny because I think just about every tribe is making claim to having the best rice.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Auto workers want a bigger piece of the pie, and that's why they've struck one plant for each of the big three automakers.
Every company is greedy right now. You know, they don't want to look out for the people that make it happen for them. Without us, you wouldn't have these cars out on the road.
Hurricane Lee is expected to be a tropical storm when it makes landfall in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, Canada tomorrow. Maine Governor Janet Mills says be ready for rain and wind there.
Crying out loud, get your boat out of the water or tie it down really, really well and anchor it, moor it. Ensuring that generators that you do have are properly fueled, installed, and in good working order.
There are so many flood victims in eastern Libya. This man says there's no time and no way to identify them.
We buried 25 people without knowing who they are or taking any samples, and the families of those people will never know who they are, will never know what happened to their children, to their sons, to their daughters, to their wives.
CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. That just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Fritos, Cheetos, Doritos. We should expect that stuff to be safe. Why does it make sense that corporations can poison the American people and we don't even know about it? Politically, there is a group who chooses to make sure that there are not enough dollars put into the Food and Drug Administration to check on these types of things.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the
$100. It's also a perfect time of year to get your air ducts cleaned this month with $100 off your air duct cleaning. An air duct cleaning will help alleviate allergies and asthma. You will enjoy less dust, lower energy bills, and your home will stay cleaner longer. Schedule your appointment today at ZeroResMinnesota.com or by calling 952-ZERO-RES and asking for the AM 950 special. Zero Res. With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Clear tonight with a low of 52, then sunshine on Saturday with a high of 70. Nightingale is your cozy, comfortable neighborhood bar and restaurant at 26th and Lindale in Minneapolis. Come in for the famous Nightingale Burger or the Ginger Tamari Chicken Wings. View their menu or place a takeout order at nightingalempls.com.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awakened. I am your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul, bringing you only the best coffee roasted to perfection.
Yeah, you know, and I also want to give a quick shout out to all the people that support us on Patreon. And just look up Native Roots Network on Patreon and become a subscriber. We really appreciate that. And we can do more things, and appreciate everyone's support, because I always get asked, how can I support you? And I said, well, you know, take care of our advertisers, and here's another direct way too. So we appreciate all the supporters, and especially during COVID when all the advertising, if you remember, it was a dark day, all of the businesses closed and the advertisers slowed down, and we had so much great support from our Patreon supporters. And again, Patreon at Native Roots Network. Hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish. And, you know, I always get FOMO when I hear these. A lot of times there's three or four things going on. I wish we had a calendar which everyone could check.
Yeah.
Going on, because I can only be in one place, and I rarely, you know, barely can do that. And you were at a great little get together last night.
Ugh. It was a lovely, lovely evening. You're right. I went to the fundraiser for the Wakan Tipi here in St. Paul. We were down on Harriet Island, which is a small island on the Mississippi River, right downtown St. Paul, mm-hmm. and had a lovely evening. It was catered by Trickster Tacos, so you know it was absolutely delicious. Mm-hmm. But it was a fundraiser for Wakan Tipi, which is a nonprofit organization that is taking back and restoring the sacred site in downtown St. Paul. It's right again on the Mississippi River. And Maggie.
Lorenz.
I wanted to say LeBeau. I don't know why. Maggie Lorenz has been the executive direction for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And she has just taken it from an idea and kind of a trash area to getting millions and millions of dollars to build a interpretation center down there. Mm-hmm. And so we had the fundraiser last night. There are lots of folks down there, and what was really lovely, it was family friendly. So mm-hmm. I brought my two little granddaughters, because Thursday night is their sleepover night, and then all day Friday with me. We went there, and my younger sister Anne was there. And it was beautiful. Maggie's daughter sang the most beautiful, beautiful song. It was just, you know, how good it feels when you're in community. It was one of those times where you drive home thinking that was best thing I could have done. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And to talk a little bit about Wakan Tipi down there, it's below the birthing caves and also the three mounds that are left over in Mounds Park. It's right down in that area. And I know the railroad was down there big time, and it was a massive cleanup effort down there that Maggie helped with, and Wakan Teepee. They put tons and tons of new soil in there because it was so contaminated down there at one time.
Yeah, this is where it's on the Mississippi River, and at one time the railroad followed right along the Mississippi River. So there's railroad ties and all the debris and all the pollution from there. But there's it butts up onto the sacred it's not sandstone. Limestone, right. Cliffs, and within those cliffs is a sacred site. There's a cave, mm-hmm. and there used to be drawings on there and hieroglyphics that got chiseled away or destroyed because it was also used. So the railroad used it for storage, like when they get these big loads off the trains. There's a kind of a dry plateau, and then it goes up to the cliffs. And then there was discussion, you know, at one point, I think that it might have been used by bootleggers because that's the perfect way to bring in illegal alcohol during prohibition time. But it was desecrated, it was destroyed, and with Maggie's guidance and a lot of hard work by a lot of wonderful people, they've got it cleaned up. The state of Minnesota appropriated a couple $1 million to help with that process, and then to create this interpretive center. Mm-hmm. But it's also a nature preserve now, so there are walkways down there, and it's filled with, you know, indigenous grasses and flowers. Birds have come back like crazy. You know, animals that are you know, live in that kind of a prairie landscape are back, and it's just a lovely little place right in downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so proud to. I worked on legislation to get those dollars to the project, and I can't think of. I can think of a lot of things, but this is one of the things I am most proud of at the legislature having completed.
Yeah, when I was a teacher, when we brought students down there and planted berries and sage and sweetgrass. It was really fun. We brought about 30 native students down there, and spent half a day down there just planting stuff. And to my understanding, so that was like 2 or 3 years ago that this stuff has really flourished down there that we planted. So mm-hmm. that's exciting to hear and talk about.
Yeah. And so I think they'll be breaking ground on the work that they're doing for the building, and just really excited to think about what the potential, you know, untapped potential is there. And I would really encourage folks to go to the Wakan Teepee website. It's wakantipi.org. There's so much information down there or on the website about the Wakan Teepee Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary. There's information about the Indian mounds. Sweet Hollow Park is where a lot of the immigrants that came over, right. you know, kind of built up their shacks, Pig's Eye, and Boys Totem Town proper. There's so much information on there. And then under some of the programming, there's tons of really great things and resources. And of course, okay, this is another thing. I get really excited because not only have they been working on creating this Wakan Teepee Center, but they're also been working on daylighting Phelan Creek.
Right.
You remember that? Right. Yeah. And so this is a creek that actually got covered up and sort of buried and was flowing underground, but that was not the original, you know, way that it did it, that it you know, it's tributary. And so they've been unearthing it and restoring it back into its natural. And that creek flows down into the Mississippi River right down there. So there's just lots of really cool things doing. And I'm just going to put it out there, folks. If you're listening to this and you want to support a really great Indigenous program, look up the Wakan Teepee. And if you've got a few dollars to donate, or if you've got a lot of dollars to donate, please do so, because it's just an incredible asset to our communities.
Well, what's interesting, I don't know, Mary, if you're familiar with Hidden Falls.
Mm-hmm.
They did the same thing, and now the falls are rolling. And before, it was falls, and then after that, it was, you know, buried, and now it's been daylighted. And before, it only ran if it rained. The falls would only work if it rained, and now the falls are continuously water going through there, and it's a thing. It's really cool. It's really cool to see.
It is, and I'm just really proud of the way Minnesotans, not just the Indigenous people, but non-Indigenous people, are beginning to recognize how important it is that we restore some of these natural aspects to our communities, how much we've lost.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman sitting at my table last night, and he was there because the city of Bloomington is looking to do, you know, some restoring some names to different places and acknowledging the existence of our ancestors. And, you know, this is just a gentleman who has taken Dakota lesson, the language, and he's, you know, for years been studying it, and has such a keen interest, but also respect. It's not just, he's not using it in any way other than his own personal, and then advocating for it. But, it's just Minnesota is, I think, is really coming along in that area. Not everywhere, but right. In Minnesota, but lots of really good nuggets of communities that are acknowledging the beautiful history that is Minnesota.
You know, I often wonder what we're going to talk about every Friday, but we always have a good time. And we really did a couple segments on ricing and this program to see Wakan Teepee specifically, how much they've grown and become a thing here in St. Paul specifically. But what a great, you know, just to think about the positive stuff once in a while is really, because everything's so daunting. And I just really appreciate you bringing these things up. It's, you know, I think about that because I've watched that. I've known Maggie for years too, and watched her work. And you know, your sister was on the board years ago, and, you know, just all how we're all interconnected too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, again, really, really appreciate you stopping in and having this fireside chat with us. Really, it's awesome, State Senator. Hey, up next, Wendy Pilot with her sacred animal section. We're going to be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Get ready for one of the coolest music events of the year. The 11th Powderhorn Porch Fest will showcase top-notch local artists spanning indie, rock, country, blues, and more on three porches that will transform into stages. Powderhorn Porch Fest is Saturday, September 16th from 4 to 10 p.m. along 17th Avenue between 32nd and 34th Streets. Featured are 13 talented artists and the electrifying Nerd D opening and closing the show. And it's not just about the tunes. Enjoy sweet and savory delights from food trucks and cool merch from local vendors. Don't miss the Reverie Cafe and Beer Garden, back for the third year, perfectly complementing the music and festivities. Hosted by the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association and neighbors on 17th Avenue, this festival showcases strong cross-neighborhood partnerships. Powderhorn Porch Fest isn't just a music festival, it energizes our South Minneapolis community and supports local programs and services. Again, that's Saturday, September 16th from 4 to 10 p.m. along 17th Avenue between 32nd and 34th Streets. Learn more at ppna.org.
Tune in this Saturday morning right here on AM 950 from 7 to 8 a.m. for the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. We'll be discussing how you can grow indoors all winter long, as well as lawnmower and small engine end-of-season maintenance. Our guest is from kidsgardening.org, Emily Shipman, and we'll answer your garden questions. That's all this Saturday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on AM 950. Tell a friend and let's grow together.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Oh! Hey, Kadagi, welcome back. Producer Haley Cherry here with you. Shashape Wangawenik, that means Little Eagle Princess. I am Ho-Chunk Nation Eagle Clan descendant. Host Robert Pilot and I hope to be at the Mankato Wachipi or Mankato Powwow this Sunday. So if you see us, please come say hi, as we'd love to hear from you. With that being said, I'd like to introduce this last segment of our show. Here is Humane Policy Advocate Wendy Pilot with this week's Sacred Animals Fun Fact Friday.
Thank you, Haley. Hey, everybody. My name is Hana Jihihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dagger Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hana Jingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a Humane Policy Volunteer Leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level, and it's always my pleasure to do that. Today is Friday, so we have always a Fun Fact Friday that I share, and today I have a really sweet story about Scout. Scout was living at the Antrim County Animal Shelter in Bel Air, Michigan, until he repeatedly escaped to a nearby nursing home. Residents there were such a fan that they ended up adopting Scout. So Scout's journey began when he was discovered by a midnight nurse lying on the couch in the nursing home's lobby, the animal control center located across the highway from Meadowbrook was called to pick him up. However, within the same week, Scout was found on the same couch two more times. He had scaled fences at the animal shelter and navigated his way across the busy highway to enter the nursing home building through automatic doors. Recognizing Scout's determination to be at Meadowbrook, the nursing home's administrator, who has a special place in her heart for animals, decided to adopt him. When Scout first arrived, he was timid. He also had BBs lodged in his face, which the vet discovered. Although the BBs don't seem to cause him any trouble, they are part of his mysterious traumatic past. One resident perfectly described the impact of having Scout in the nursing home, saying that it makes the facility seem more like a home rather than an institution. This is especially true for those who had dogs in the past. Scout is loving, social, and has strong intuition for when someone is sick or feeling down. He spends extra time with those individuals, providing comfort and companionship. And another story that I read about Scout, the administrators said that Scout will search out people who need him, who are depressed, who are sad. And she said that even there were some residents who actually were passing, and he would go on the bed with them and stay with them
until they passed. So he's a really special dog. Scout's backstory remains a mystery, as the shelter had no information about him, no vet papers, and no chip. There is some speculation that he may have once belonged to a resident at the nursing home, which could explain his determination to be there. Regardless of his past, Scout knows where his home is now and shows no desire to leave. Even when taken for walks in the hall, he remains off leash and doesn't approach the automatic doors that he once used to enter the building. Scout's presence at Meadowbrook Nursing Home has brought joy and comfort to the residents and staff, providing that sometimes home is where the heart is or where the dog is. So it's a really cute story. There's even a couple of videos on it. You just have to Google Scout, the dog who went to the nursing home, and all the articles come up about Scout. And I just really feel like animals have like a special instinct, and they're guided by something we don't understand, and they do things that we just can't even imagine. My sister had a cat. She had two cats, Bonnie and Clyde. I ended up having Clyde later on, but that's a whole nother story. But Bonnie, the cat, lived with my sister and her husband and my little baby niece. But she lived across the street and down a little ways. There was a hospital there. And Bonnie would go walk down the street every day, get out of the house, and go and walk into the hospital. And the cat had a little tag on it with the name and, you know, phone number. And every day my sister would get a call. Your cat is walking through the emergency room. Your cat was found on the second floor of the, you know, whatever. And every day my sister would be like, oh my God, I can't keep the cat in. The cat wants to be in the emergency room and in the hospital and walk around. And, you know, my sister's just like, I have no control. I can't control this cat. This cat escapes the house. I can't keep her in. And I don't know why she wants to be in the hospital, but she does. One day, you know, then they were starting to get mad at my sister. And then one day Bonnie just never came home, and that was the end of Bonnie. But my sister just feels like one of the nurses or somebody there got the cat from like the parking lot or whatever, and just, you know, took the cat home or whatever, so it didn't go, or maybe brought it to the shelter. We don't know. We don't know the story behind Bonnie, but there was a pull. The cat was pulled to go to the hospital. So it's just weird how animals do that. There's another story you could look up. This is a story about a dog in El Paso, Texas, who spent a really long time at the shelter. And finally, the dog was adopted. And after a couple of days at the new home, the dog escaped and traveled 10 miles back to the shelter. And it took the dog 3 days to navigate and to get back to the shelter. And the dog was seen on the camera outside ringing the shelter doorbell. And they came out and they were like, oh my God, this dog just, you know, was adopted. And now the dog's back at the shelter. The dog was at the shelter for so long, and he just loved the staff there. And this is where the dog felt comfortable. So the dog didn't want to be adopted and wanted to stay at the shelter. That's the first I've ever heard of. But, you know, I mean, the dog was comfortable there, had its place. The staff was nice to the dog, and the dog just felt safe. So there's so many stories out there about, you know, animals doing unusual things, and we don't really understand why. And, you know, I mean, Wanda and the dogs that we've had in the past, and even our cats, that we've had in the past have always shown us love and support. And Robert and I always talk about Wanda being our funny dog and how she just does funny things and she follows us around and she sneaks down in the basement when she's not supposed to. And
Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith, if you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network. Civicmedia.us.